I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're Building Bridges.
After Tyree Nichols, what's next for the movement to dismantle the police state?
But first, we have a treat against a very bleak and painful background. We are joined by Raymond Nat Turner, who is a griot, a town crier, the artistic director of the jazz poetry ensemble Upsurge, and who has appeared at numerous festivals, including the Monterey Jazz Festival and a Panafest, Ghana West Africa Festival. And he's going to take us into a pointed and moving discussion as our town crier of what is to be done, the aftermath of Tyree Nichols, not another Tyree Nichols. And we'll tell you more about that, but it's so good to have you with us, Raymond Nat Turner, and you're going to do a reading for us.
Yes, I am. It's great to be with you.
And thank you for helping us build bridges. You're listening to Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg with Building Bridges. And now, take us to one of your artistic expressions. Be our griot, be our town crier for Tyree Nichols.
Yes, this piece is called Tennessee's Tonton Macoot, or Rotten Orchard Called Capitalist State Machine. Epigraph, quote, hurt people, end quote. Activist Anonymous. Breathing tube snaking from busted blue black Botox lips, snaking from swollen, battered, bloodied face, snaking from a stuck, ending errands and dreams. Presto, another mother's atmospheric river of tears. Black magic melanin body cameras training on Tennessee's Tonton Macoot. Unconscious streams of raw sewage spurting from blue donut holes under color of law. Plantation medicine men overdosing boot, fist, shock, club, chemical cures for traffic stop for their suspect police pinatas, new identity. Black magic melanin body cameras training on Tennessee's Tonton Macoot. Thank you for your Confederate service. Thank you for your apartheid state, vitamin S-fueled skill sets, for your toxic Memphis masculinity. And thank you for your service at Kabul, Bagram, Baghdad, Port-au-Prince, stop. Black magic melanin body cameras training on Tennessee's Tonton Macoot. Bullwhip behavior, mirroring Twin Cities, Big Apple, City of Angels, Windy City, City of Brotherly Love, beatdown zones, Pop City battlefields where chokeholds, neo-teens, and improvised firing squads lurk, waging war of terror. Sweeping tents, tarps, cardboard mattresses into hungry jaws of garbage trucks, grinding human rights into gunpowder. Black magic melanin body cameras training on Tennessee's Tonton Macoot. Skin folks playing basketball, pledging Greek, praying to the same God and unwrapping riddles from fantasy called community control of wild wars.
I take a deep breath every time I listen to your town crying, to your wisdom, towards your prophetic call, and this time for Tyree Nichols, I want to thank you for that offering and definitely invite you back to have more of the discussion of the melding of art and politics, the culture, the way we live our lives. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for doing what you do and all the fabulous guests that you bring on to put a section into the bridge.
Well, thank you. And no less, again, our dear, dear poet extraordinaire, Raymond Nat Turner, and activist extraordinaire. But the two go hand in hand.
We're now joined by Alex Vitale, President of Sociology and Coordinator of the Policing and Social Justice Project at Brooklyn College and the City University of New York Graduate Center, author of City of Disorder, How the Quality of Life Campaign Transformed New York Politics and the End of Policing.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us again. I wish we didn't always have to have you back at these tragic, painful moments. But in another way, I'm delighted that you are there with us because you help us think and go beyond the box. I was thinking of a piece that I read recently by Ellie Mustel of The Nation. And he said, "The race of a cop is cop," reflecting on the violent lynching of Tyree Nichols at the hands of Memphis police. The fact that five black cops are directly responsible for Nichols' death doesn't obscure the fact that policing operates to uphold white supremacy. Police of all races are institutionally designed to be predators. What happens from here? "I hope they don't get me," says Mustel. "I hope they don't get my kids. But all I can do is hope, because too many people have decided that my death or my children's death is a price they're willing to pay for the fear the cops induce." Whoa. Well said. Well, Alex Vitale, where in the world do we go from here, and how are we to understand what did happen with Tyree Nichols? Is this about the issue of more body cameras? Is this the issue of better trained police? Is this about the issue, indeed, of people of color winding up in administrative or other positions? How are we to understand and prevent yet another Tyree Nichols? And thank you so much for being gracious enough to spend time with us.
Well, my pleasure under these difficult circumstances. Look, I wish there were some simple fix that we could just give police a few hours of training, slap some body cameras on them, teach them to be nicer and friendlier, and the whole thing would get better. But police have been, quote-unquote, reforming themselves ever since Ferguson. The officers involved in the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis were wearing body cameras, had implicit bias training, de-escalation training, mindfulness training. They had this new bystander policy that said officers were supposed to intervene if they saw misconduct by a fellow officer, and none of it worked. It didn't make any difference. And now we look at Memphis, where community residents have been demanding an end to these pretextual traffic stops for years, and those officers had anti-bias training, had de-escalation training, were wearing body cameras, and it just didn't make any difference. Because the mayor of Memphis told the police to create a unit called Scorpion and to do whatever it takes to get the bad guys off the streets. Unfortunately, what we saw was how they do that, which is through violence, intimidation, escalation, and just a gross disregard for the well-being of communities targeted for intensive policing.
Alex, Black Americans are facing with, after the civil rights legislation and the programs of the war on poverty, Black Americans began to face new policing practices that emerged under the banner of the so-called war on crime. The routine stop and frisks that attacked people's dignity, the breaking up of community gatherings, the presence of armed, uniformed officers in the hallways of otherwise under-resourced public schools, just to give a few examples. But maybe you can take us into that whole issue of the ideology, the function, the control function of the police as they were conceived from the really earliest times, which I will take back to plantation capitalism, really. The slave catchers. I mean, is this at the root of understanding what policing is in our society?
Well, I think most people labor under a kind of liberal illusion about what the nature of policing is. They imagine that police exist to enforce the law and that the law exists to benefit everyone equally. And if we could just get the police to properly enforce the law, that everyone would benefit from that. But this is really a gross misunderstanding of the history and functional nature of policing, which is really about producing a kind of social order, but a social order that was never designed to benefit everyone equally. So, yes, we can link the development of policing in the American South to the institution of slavery. But in the North, it makes more sense to talk about the role of mass migration and industrialization, the emergence of urbanized industrial capitalism, gives rise to resistance to poverty and exploitation in both organized and disorganized forms, from labor strikes to bread riots to pickpockets. And policing is created to manage those consequences of these systems of exploitation. And in the American West, policing emerges mostly out of colonial practices. Forces like the Texas Rangers were created to help drive out and exterminate indigenous populations, to drive out historically Mexican landholders to make way for white settlement. Today, we don't have slavery and colonialism in that 19th century sense, but what we have is a kind of neoliberal austerity that gives tax breaks to the rich and cuts basic services for everyone else, which has produced these problems of mass homelessness, untreated mental health and substance abuse problems, black markets of drugs and sex work and stolen goods so that people can survive. And then those problems are turned into problems of crime to be managed by police. And that is what's driven this expansion of policing into every aspect of the lives of poor and non-white communities in the United States.
So then we're left within the wake, for example, of the police killings of Michael Brown and Eric Garner and Tamir Rice and so many others. And those were back in 2014, Tamir Rice. And so Americans were told there'd be a new way of knowing what really happened. We can see for our own eyes the truth of policing. Ah, the body cameras. They would finally lift the curtain, and millions of dollars were poured into this technology. And I should say that this exists against the expansion of the training and a kind of robotization, the RoboCop ideology, which is going on now in Atlanta, where they're building over acres and acres of pristine forest land, Cop City. For worldwide training of yet more cops and more militarization. So why is not the answer to fight for more reforms or more cameras or indeed to support the cop cities that'll give us better training? Continue with that idea of what policing is that negates that as an answer to the deaths of the Tamir Rice, of the Tyrese, and of the Eric Garners.
we have poured literally billions of dollars into police reform since the uprising in Ferguson. And last year, police in the United States killed more people than in any year in recent decades. A record number of people. Where's the evidence that these reforms actually work? Well, they don't. At best, they bring about short-term marginal improvements in this little place or that little place, but they don't really get at the core of the problem. Right? We keep imagining that we just need the police to do their job better, but what if there are fundamental injustices at the heart of what they do? For instance, the war on drugs. We've been waging this war on drugs through intensive and invasive policing for 50-plus years. No lives have been saved. No one's been prevented from getting drugs. Nothing positive has come out of putting literally millions of human beings into cages as part of this war on drugs. And the solution to the racial bias, the injustice, and the brutality of the war on drugs is not to give narcotics units anti-bias training. It's to get rid of the war on drugs, to stop using police to wage what is really a war on poor people and a war on non-white people that has nothing to do with public health or public safety. There's no justice in it. And so when we similarly see homeless people in crisis on the subway, some of whom scare us, commit real harms, the solution to that is not to flood the subway with police officers, with better training, in cooperation with outreach workers. The solution is to actually build affordable, supportive housing for people in crisis, to actually intervene in housing markets in meaningful ways instead of, you know, our politicians having fancy meals and fancy restaurants with their real estate buddies making their little private get-rich schemes. We need some responsible development of social housing in this society, and that's just not even part of the political conversation, but somehow flooding the problem with policing is seen as a reasonable strategy.
Well, this time it seems that it's not about the conjuncture or relationship between reform and revolution. We are in a militarized revolution that is destroying the lives and continuously does that. And I must say, I was so incensed by Benjamin Crump really standing over the funeral pyre, if you will, of Tyre Nichols, says, aha, we have a great new model. We've got something out of this. This is a record for the indictment and charges being brought against five police officers. I reject that notion that that is a model or that's the issue or the answer, particularly for somebody who puts themselves forward as a national spokesman. In May 2020, the murder of George Floyd by police officer Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis, well, it triggered protests across the country. And there we raised the cry, indeed around the world, defund the police. And it was more than a hashtag. And it wasn't meant to be symbolic. It was literally meant to kind of dismantle the police state, the carceral state, and to really rethink the notion of public safety. So take us into that discussion and why reform is not the answer. What do we do to end policing as we know it? And what would that look like to protect our communities?
We need to talk to the young people who live in the communities that are directly targeted by this policing if we want to have a real conversation about how to move forward. I think there's been a lot of mainstream media commentary about the death of this idea of defunding police, and it's just not true. Here in New York City, we elected a whole group of city council members on that platform of rethinking public safety, and they are working on it. They are developing alternative budget proposals. They are making demands about new investments in non-police public safety strategies, and we see this going on all across the country. Every day, another city creates a non-police crisis team using civilians to respond to things like mental health crisis calls, a homeless person in distress, a substance abuse issue. All across the country, cities are eliminating their school police departments. Over 40 cities in the last couple of years have eliminated their school police departments as a result of protests by parents, students, and teachers. Dozens of cities are investing in community-based anti-violence strategies that empower communities, give them resources to solve problems within their own communities. And these are exactly the kinds of things that people were demanding on the streets in 2020 and continue to demand today in places like Memphis, where the main demand from the community has been to end pretextual traffic stops as part of a pointless war on drugs and to instead invest in community drug treatment resources and other kinds of positive interventions. We don't need to reform these jump out squads. We need to replace them with real community investments.
Activists who were boots on the ground in the millions across the world after George Floyd. Again, the focus or the clarion cry was defund the police. So at this point, there are still, and many of the Democrats particularly would say, well, what we need to do is we need to have new technologies. We need to have things like Cop City that we spend multi-millions on to technologize and enhance the sophistication. Again, why is this not the answer? You know, it's the difference between the Republicans on the border. They just want the junior AR rifles put out now by the National Rifle Association or advocated, or just blow people away. And then the Democrats would say, well, we have to have better technology to keep people out and thwart potential asylum claims. So the issue of the technologies, is this the answer, or how do we begin to, and have you seen it anywhere really happen where there is a rethinking of the function of policing and public safety and what it would look like that goes beyond one of the efforts? For example, in New York is, you know, which I would support, but don't place much stock in, and that is we should have an elected civilian complaint review board. And of course, we should deal with the issue of police immunity. It should be gone. It must be gone. What else do we do? Is it technology? Is it training? Where do we go from here? What kind of proposals do you see, Alex Vitale?
Yeah, I don't think it's more training or technology, and I don't think it's more civilian oversight boards. I don't think it's community control of police. I think it's dramatically less policing. It's investments in communities. It's ending the politics of austerity that the Democratic Party has been so committed to. They make their little downtown real estate deals and get campaign contributions in return. And the result of that is tax breaks for the rich and service cuts for everyone else. And it's killing us. Then use police to cover up those political misdeeds, those failures. Adams has no plan to address the homeless problem. He's got no plan to fix the schools. He's got no plan to address the opioid crisis. What he's got is policing to put a lid on it, to cover up the failures. So what do we do? Well, it's a mistake to think that there's no public support for this idea that we could invest in community-based alternative strategies. I just got some polling data from a team at the University of Chicago I've been working with that showed that in Chicago, when asked whether or not people would support reassigning things like traffic enforcement, calls to deal with homelessness, mental health, minor crimes, and substance abuse, to to unarmed civilians, social workers, or EMTs instead of police, 74% of people supported that idea, and fewer than 20% opposed it. And this is true of males, females, black, white, college, non-college educated, Hispanic. It's all 60, 75, 80% of respondents approve of that message. And so the challenge for us is not just to point out the obvious harms of policing. It's to keep articulating what the alternative could look like. And that's what folks like Tiffany Caban and Alexa Viles and others on the city council have been trying to do, putting out concrete programs that could be invested in that will create real public safety without all the horrible collateral consequences of relying on police.
Well, activists certainly need to not only mobilize when police kill, but focus on specialized units and their eradication and the new technologies that are becoming the backbone of the modern policing. And we were told this with a wonderful book that I think you can still get online, The Velvet Fist and the Iron Glove. Certainly something to read along with Alex Vitale's The City of Disorder, How the Quality of Life Campaign Transformed New York Politics, and The End of Policing. That's where it's at. Defund, defund, defund. You can't challenge the police state if we're pumping it full of money every year. Alex Vitale, for the work you do, thank you so much. And 30 seconds, your final thought?
We've been part of an effort that's resulted in a bill before the city council to abolish the NYPD's gang database. And this is all part of this process of not reforming police, but demanding alternatives to policing.
And we've been speaking with Alex Vitale. We want to go back and thank, and certainly Raymond Nat Turner for his stirring poetry, and all of you for listening. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Kay Nash.
And we'll continue to build bridges and to always educate, agitate, and organize to empower we the people and to defund the police, dismantle the carceral state, dismantle the police state. Alex, thanks again for joining us. And all of you for listening.
Good night.